This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, October 8th, 2021, and today will be better than yesterday. Producing this podcast from Florida is Taylor Schwenk. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York. Taylor, you know, the podcast is not a big deal. What's a big deal is you're going to officiate a wedding.
Yes, you can call me Reverend Schwenk from now on. That's the only title that I will answer to. I'm looking forward to it. I've never done anything like this before. It's for my cousin, my spiritual brother, Jonathan, and his lovely bride, Megan. And I was practicing last night. I tell a little story, you know, giving the guests instructions. Everyone's got to turn their phone off, Buster. That's very important at a wedding in 2020. So I'm making sure I'm checking all those boxes and, you know, getting in the zone. You know, can't have too many drinks.
Are you nervous? Are you nervous?
No, not really. Honestly, this is like, not silly, but we do this every day. We're talking to way more people than, you know, the 100 that'll be in the room there. So I'm ready to rumble.
So the podcast, you feel like, helps your wedding preparation?
Yes, definitely. I wish, you know, I could talk a little more baseball or a little more college football in the ceremony. They said no college football talk, no jokes, strictly love. So, you know, I guess I'll adhere to their wishes. It is their wedding, but yeah, I'm ready to go.
But they didn't rule out anything about the Orioles based on what you just said.
You know, my cousin Jonathan, he is an Orioles fan. We've had some memorable Orioles moments together. That 2012, the first playoff game, we were together for that. We hugged, we cried tears of joy afterwards. I don't think he's going to want that in the ceremony, but it's could be on the table, Buster. I'll let the listeners know if I sneak it in.
Okay. You know, if all of a sudden I hear about a bunch of people out in the wedding going, ooh, like, you know, they have during the national anthem, yeah. Right? Then I'll know that you will have manifested fully. All right. Later today, the series between the Dodgers and the Giants, the one everyone's going to be watching, will begin. Gabe Kapler, Dave Roberts, of course, played on the 2004 Boston Red Sox together. Gabe Kapler, the Giants manager, Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, and Kapler talked about his relationship.
I really like Doc. Obviously known him for a really long time. Saw him be an extraordinary teammate in Jacksonville. We were teammates in AA. And then again, obviously with the Red Sox, and saw him steal one of the biggest bases in the history of baseball to some degree, but definitely in the history of the Red Sox. And then kind of watching him throughout the rest of his career, playing against him, ultimately seeing him in San Diego, and then, you know, watching him develop in LA. Yeah, I just think he works really hard and cares a lot. And I think one thing that stands out to me is when I watch Doc managing games, he's very intense and very emotional and very invested. And, you know, I respect all of that.
I think the person who cut the highlights, as an aside, Taylor, definitely is a football guy. Did you notice the liner note on Gabe Kapler?
Giants head coach?
Yes. Gabe Kapler is identified on the rundown and the possible audio highlights that we used today. Not Giants head coach.
Not manager. Yeah.
All right. Corbin Burnes, Brewers pitcher, who will begin the series today against the Milwaukee Braves, talked about making the playoffs 4 years in a row.
For us to you know, reach the postseason 4 years in a row is I think the more special part. You know, these guys have worked their butts off and have earned the right to be here and playing in this game. So, you know, I'm excited to be able to take the ball game one and go out there, see what I can do to, you know, to help us get in the win column, you know, game one. But yeah, you know, we're getting to the point where we're 4 years in a row now. We're starting to get used to this. So it's something that, you know, we expect to go make a deep run.
Here's Braves first baseman Freddie Freeman.
You know, guys started coming in. We started playing together. You know, a couple lineup changes in the last couple of weeks, moving Jorge to leadoff. It just, we've been mixing and matching, trying to figure out all year. It's been an absolute grind. And I think that's what's so special about it this year, is because we felt like we've been grinding all year, trying to figure it out, you know. And we came out with 88 wins and the division title for the fourth straight year through all our ups and downs and losing the best player in the National League. And thought we were going to have Mike Soroka in April. It never happened. You know, just so many things that could have derailed a season. We didn't let it happen. So I think the deadline and Alex going and getting those pieces just kind of just gave us that boost of energy to make it.
Of course, he was referring to Ronald Acuna Jr. there. We're going to be talking with Carl Ravitch, who's going to be calling this series for ESPN Radio, Braves versus Brewers. Last night, Rays and Red Sox began their division series, and Shane McClanahan was outstanding.
Checks the runner and the 2-2, swung on and missed, and he strikes Devers out to retire the side.
Dan Shulman on ESPN Radio, McClanahan had electric stuff. He's thrown up to 100 miles per hour. His great tailing fastball, mixing that with a nasty slider. He shut down the Red Sox lineup, and he got help from Wander Franco.
1-1 the count, and now a swing and a liner into left center. A solid base hit. Cut off by Hernandez, but around to third, a Rosarena. Now getting the wave, and he will slide in safely. It's an RBI double for Franco. A Rosarena never broke stride, and the ball took a while coming in from left center, and the Rays strike first.
With the Rays leading 2-0, bottom of the third inning, Nelson Cruz came to the plate.
Two down and the base is empty. 3-1 pitch on the way, and a high fly ball. Left center field. Will the ballpark hold it? It hit one of the rings. It hit one of the catwalks.
And they ruled it a home run for Nelson Cruz. And so the Rays at that point seemed like they had early control of the game. And then Randy Arozarena began to manifest.
3-2 on the way. And a swing and a drive. Deep left field. And he has hit it out.
Yeah, and Arozarena wasn't done. He was on third base in the bottom of the seventh inning.
Taylor's got a sign. Here comes Arozarena, and he just stole home. Randy Arozarena steals home.
It was an amazing play. We're going to be talking about that with Carl Ravitch coming up, about the perfect timing that Arozarena had. He's the first player in Major League Baseball history to homer and steal home in the same postseason game. Kevin Cash, the Rays manager, talked about that play.
The steal of home, that was, you know, one of the cooler things I've seen on a baseball field. He looks special player. He certainly gets up for the moment. He's proven that day in and day out, and definitely when it's postseason time.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora talked about pulling starter Eduardo Rodriguez in the second inning.
We felt like right there we have to contain the game. So Gear Rich came in and got the out, and then Nick gave us quality innings. It's not that we map it out that way, but it felt with that lineup and the way they are, that was a moment that we had to stop it right there to get Randy out and then move forward, and we did.
Game two of that series will be later today. By the way, Red Sox slugger J.D. Martinez was available to the Red Sox. He's been coming back from that sprained left ankle suffered in the last regular season game when he stepped on second base. He had not been on the active roster for Tuesday's wild card, but he was for last night's game. And at some point, the Red Sox are hopeful that he'll return. Astros and White Sox started their series earlier in the day on Thursday, and Jose Altuve had a neat base running play in the bottom of the third.
Altuve at third, the pitch. Swing a ground ball to third. Picked by Moncada.
No way.
Throw to the plate. Save! Altuve scores, and the Astros take a 2-0 lead on the RBI from Bregman.
Yordan Alvarez came through for the Astros in the bottom of third.
Bregman at first, the pitch. Swing a high fly ball, muscle left center field. Robert looking up. This ball is off the wall. Just to the left of the low wall in center field. The cut throw to Anderson. Bregman around third. He will score without a throw. And Alvarez into second with an RBI double. It's a two-run third inning and a 3-0 lead for Houston.
That from ESPN Radio. Michael Brantley is back in the lineup and generating runs.
The 2-1. Swinging a ground ball through the right side. There's nobody home. Myers scores. Altuve behind him. And Michael Brantley, with no shift in front of him, finds green grass and high tides forever. A two-run single to make it 5-0 Houston in the fourth.
And meanwhile, Lance McCullers was dominating on the mound, getting some help from Kyle Tucker.
No walks for McCullers, whose 3-1 pitch is drilled to right field by Moncada. Tucker going back on it at the wall. Jumps and he makes the catch right in front of the fence. What a play. Kyle Tucker takes away extra bases. And Lance McCullers is through six shutout one-hit innings with a little help from his friend in right field.
And a lot of help on defense from the Astros infield. They repeatedly turned double plays in a 6-1 win. If there was a silver lining for the White Sox in this game, it's that they made the Houston relievers work late in the game. We'll see if that has an effect on today's game. Dusty Baker, the Astros manager, talked about Altuve slide into home.
That was a tremendous slide. I mean, he's an excellent slider. And, that was big for us, because I think at the time it was 1-0. And so anytime you can add a run, when you're playing such a good opponent, it's big. That Bregman put the ball in play, and if you put the ball in place, some good positive things can happen.
Tony La Russa, the White Sox manager, of course, has been doing a job for millions of years. I can't wait to hear this answer to the question of, will his team get discouraged?
I mean, it's a good question to ask because you don't know our club. If you watch our club, it doesn't get discouraged. You get beat. If they beat you, you tip your cap and you come out tomorrow. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind we'll come out ready to play.
I knew the answer is going to be salty, that's for sure. Taylor, what do you got?
Buster, we have a boatload of games, an absolute smorgasbord on ESPN Radio this weekend. I'm going to run them all off for everyone. I'm sure you can go to ESPN.com and find the full schedule if this eludes you. But here we go, Buster. Today, October 8th, we've got White Sox Astros tuning in at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Then we've got Braves Brewers, 4 o'clock Eastern. Red Sox Rays, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Dodgers Giants, 9 p.m. Eastern time. That is your Friday. What a loaded slate. Then on Saturday, October 9th, my birthday, happy birthday to me, Braves, Brewers, 4:30 tune in time. That is Eastern as well. Dodgers, Giants, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. And then on Sunday, the 10th, Rays, Red Sox, 3:30 tune in time Eastern. And then Astros, White Sox, 7:30 p.m. tune in time. Wow, what a slate of baseball we've got going on this weekend.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
All aboard. It's the Ravage Train with Carl Ravage.
Carl Ravage, play-by-play man on ESPN Radio this weekend. Carl, you're in Milwaukee in allegedly a haunted hotel, the Pfister.
The Pfister, one of the great old hotels going back to the late 1800s. Gilded foyer, beautiful place. Updated, but the rooms have those really high ceilings. And if you've ever been on the Tower of Terror at Walt Disney World and you're sitting in that ride and you sort of see the long hallway where everything kind of looks the same and you wonder what's at the end of it, it has those hallways where the wallpaper's all the same and you're just kind of waiting for something or someone or some image to poke itself out from the other end. I'll be honest, when I shut the lights out, I did see the shades seem to close by themselves, but that was the only presence that I would have felt in the room over the course of the evening. And I did not hear Tim Kirkshen or anyone else running down the hallways because their sleep had been interrupted by some type of ghost.
Does Tim Kirkjian, do we know whether or not he believes in ghosts? Because my instinct is he does.
Well, he's afraid of everything. As he told me yesterday on the drive, we kind of went the old owner's route. Remember when the owners would have meetings in Chicago and the commissioner, Bud Selig, would drive up 94 from Milwaukee. We took that same road. We landed in Chicago and drove to Milwaukee. On a ride, you talk about everything. And he was explaining about all the things that he's afraid of, including heights and motorcycles, because Harley Davidson's got a huge presence here. And I said, would you ever ride a motorcycle? Oh, no, I would never ride a motorcycle. Anything that I don't have full control over, I'm not going to get on. I don't really like being in airplanes. I hate heights. I'm afraid of snakes, all those things. So I learned about all of them. I'm sure ghosts are on that list.
Yeah, and he's afraid of any weather under 90 degrees. So this is the perfect. Yeah. You guys will be indoors for the Brewers games, and then it'll be down in Atlanta for the Braves games. All right. Speaking of fear, I think the Red Sox at this point fear Randy Arozarena. This is, again, give a listen to what happened last night.
Taylor's got a sign. Here comes Arozarena, and he just stole home. Randy Arozarena steals home.
And Carl, I got to tell you, I thought Kevin Cash was dead on saying it was one of the most exciting plays he's seen on a baseball field, because I don't remember a steal of home that was better timed than what I saw last night. It was like clockwork the way that he worked this out. What'd you see?
Well, Corey, yeah, I mean, it was when you then soon saw the replay of it, you know, you realize that Taylor is a sort of a double set pitcher. He's a lefty, so his back's turned toward him. The broadcast indicated and showed how far Randy Arozarena was down the line, given that Red Sox and Devers were in a shift. So he had a 30 to 40 foot lead, you know, on a 90 foot base path. It was great. As soon as Taylor went into his routine, Randy was off. And by the time Taylor had heard to throw the ball, you know, Arozarena had gone into his dive. It was brilliant. And I'm sure Kevin Cash has never seen something so exciting, because if you think about it, Kevin Cash was staring right down the third baseline. He's watching this Randy Arozarena train bearing down the tracks towards home plate. I mean, he had the greatest view ever. He also had a 4-0 lead. His team was pitching great. It worked out. So it was as good as you can get. And I think we all recognize there are certain players who seem to rise to the occasion in the postseason. And it's not a huge sample size, but boy, Randy Arozarena is starting off the second one as well as he did the first one. I mean, it's incredible.
Carl, as fun as the wild card game was in Boston the other night, I got to tell you, even going into that game, I thought there's no chance either one of these teams beats the Rays. Because I think the Rays are so stacked, and they're, you know, they all the different elements of that team have come together. You get Shane McClanahan starting last night as a rookie. He's throwing 100 miles per hour with a tailing fastball and a nasty slider. You got Arozarena running all over the place. You got Wander Franco at 20 years old, having great at bats. They just have so much acute talent on that roster.
Yeah. So the only question, I think, going into a series against a team like Boston or any other team for the Rays was, wait, you're going to start rookies in the first two, if not three games? How are they going to be able to handle it? And then the conversation becomes, so wait, the Rays are the best team in the league. And now moving forward, if you have McClanahan and Boz and Rasmussen and Glasnow, instead of having the openers, which was a thing for Tampa for a while, you now have four what appear to be legitimate starters to go with the 20-year-old shortstop, to go with all the players who are fabulous to begin with. And, you know, Kevin Cash, I guess, to his credit, is kind of getting fed up and pissed off with the same question, like, how are you doing this, when the answer is on the field? The players are just better than most other teams. And collectively, they're way better than any team in the American League East, and will be very competitive, if not better than whoever advances in the other division series. But think about where they are now today, and then moving into next season. And for anybody that thinks the Rays are going away, they're only getting better, and it may be way better.
Yeah. And in this particular series against the Red Sox, they're going to run out, you know, left-handed pitching, which is a problem. Excuse me. They're going to run out that that lineup that does so great against left-handed pitching. And unfortunately for Alex Cora, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez was the guy he needed to start last night because of all he started on Tuesday night. Today they got Chris Sale, who, you know, despite the fact that, you know, he volunteered to pitch in the wild card game, Alex Cora knew, no, there's no chance that's happening because everybody sort of saw Sale, you know, regress as this time went along this year in this first season that he's pitched after his Tommy John surgery. It's not a great matchup for the Red Sox one way or the other, and especially against a team with that much talent. You know, I'd never forget a conversation I had with Eric Neander, the head of baseball ops for the Rays. This has always stuck with me as maybe the best perspective of anyone from a small market team. He said, look, the biggest resource that any team has is not the payroll. It's not the draft picks and that sort of those assets. It's all of the innings and all of the plate appearances that each team has access to during the course of a regular season. Because that in those, you can help to make players better. That's the perspective of the Rays on everything, right? Yeah. Look at everything as an opportunity. And don't worry about the fact that your payroll is one third of the size of the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, your goal as an organization, your goal as a parent, your goal as a teacher, you know, your goal in any position of leadership is to put those that you are leading in the best possible position to succeed. And the Rays do that. And then they look at the players that they have and identify what they are best at, even if they don't know it yet. Here's what all of our information and analytics are telling us about you. If you go out there and do this, you will maximize your potential. Translated, you will then succeed and make money in this game and maybe have some longevity or be able to go sign a free agent contract. Michael Wacha is one of the great examples of that this year. They explained to Michael Wacha, here's what we think you can do best for us and for yourself. Instead of starting games and trying to perhaps not maximize your velocity, we want you to be a guy that comes into the game for two innings, three innings maybe, throw as hard as you possibly can. With your breaking stuff, you will be more effective. And he is. The velocity is up at 96 to 98, and he's a better pitcher. He fits a role for the team because the team has guys that can now start. And that's what they do. He's just sort of the most recent classic example of how we maximize, as you said, your talent. And Michael Wacha is just another example in a long line. And look, ultimately, in order to have any of this work, it has to succeed. And they've succeeded. And it's been proven over and over again. But it's not like we're making stuff up here. We identify players that have a certain skill. We also have drafted really well, and it turns into something that perhaps other teams didn't see. They're a great identifier of talent. And other teams do it well, but the Rays do it as well as anybody, if not better.
Carl, in late July, we had a Sunday night game in which the Brewers played host to Chicago White Sox. And I remember watching the White Sox that weekend saying, wow, that's a team that could have a deep October run. But since then, I mean, they just continually have taken dings with various players, specifically in their starting rotation. Lance Lynn went out last night. We were talking about him at the, you know, back in late July as a possible Cy Young candidate. And he got hurt down the stretch. He doesn't seem the same. He got hit around last night. And on the flip side, Lance McCullers Jr. might be one of the two or three best pitchers in the American League in terms of how well he's throwing right now. He was dominant last night.
He was great. It's just so interesting. You know, it was sort of an observation yesterday watching both of those games, and you watch them from the beginning. And in a lot of ways, it was also reminiscent of the wild card game in Boston. If you watch the game closely, you know, the Astros got hits. And then when the White Sox came up, even when they squared the ball up, which they did fairly frequently through the course of the early innings, they were warning track shots. I just remember watching that Yankees game at Fenway. There were some balls hit, and Stanton's obviously notwithstanding, because they ended up in hits, but their home runs in, at other times in other parks. Joey Gallo hit a couple of balls that would have been homers. It feels very telling. And last night, if you watched Eduardo Rodriguez's first couple of pitches were borderline strikes that were called balls. And you can almost feel momentum from early indicators that this is not going to be their night. One team has ground balls go through, the other hits right into shifts just perfectly, even if they're hitting balls 100 miles an hour off the bat. It was just striking to me, and maybe coincidental, maybe that's it. I asked Tim about it when we were watching the game. He said, "Ravi, that's just baseball." But there were indicators in both games yesterday and in that Yankee wildcard game that one team seems, and I don't want to say destined, because nobody's destined to win. You've got to play the game. But there were things within the game, instances where you're like, it's not going to happen for that team tonight. Like, it's just not. They're off by a tick. The ball's missing, you know, missing the barrel by a hair, and the other team, it's hitting it. And I don't know how you quantify whatever that is, but in watching the two games yesterday, when Eduardo Rodriguez didn't get the first strike call on the pitch that he threw, you know him. There's a history. You're like, this is not going to be a good night for him, and it wasn't. So, kind of a long, winding answer to your question about Lance Lynn and the way the Astros destroyed them, and McCullers, he's really good. And I know I've done many games with Framber Valdez on the mound. How quickly a 5-game series, you immediately say, ooh, Chris Sale, trouble for the Red Sox. Framber Valdez, Lucas Giolito, if Framber's on, that's 2-0 going back. And I know they held serve, but now you've got to win one of three games. That's a lot easier than going back 1-1. And these 5-game series are really so dependent on the game one starter. And if they win, how it seems to really dramatically put pressure, even as the road team, you got to win that game, because boy, it's going to be really hard after this.
We got a bleach tweet from Rick Gabler, who makes reference to Dusty Baker's history as a manager. 534 career winning percentage, 1987 wins, 1190 win seasons, at least one division title with all five teams he manages. Dusty Baker, the best manager to not win a World Series. And B, is he a surefire Hall of Famer? Let's throw in that he had nearly 2,000 hits and almost 250 homers during a long playing career. Carl, he should be making a speech in Cooperstown sometime.
There's no doubt about it. And he's a unique person. He's a wonderful personality for the sport of baseball. There is a reason that the Astros hired Dusty Baker beyond his baseball acumen, coming out of their disastrous blank show that they created. Here's somebody who can talk to you about any subject on the planet. He can deflect attention away from the players who self-inflicted their own attention and wound. So there's a reason there. He's been let go from organizations at curious times when, like Buck Showalter, you've brought them to the altar. And just as the official is about to say, you know, is anybody objecting to this marriage, it's like ownership or somebody says, yes, we actually do, even though we're this close, we need somebody else to get us over the finish line. So there have been a few examples where you wonder if he had stayed with the organization. You know, Washington is, look, all of them, San Francisco, Washington, wherever he's been, he seemingly has won. They seem to be on the verge of doing something special, and Dusty gets bumped. It's been very, very strange. But his persona, his experience, and here, of course, with the Braves, there's experience he's got with Hank Aaron, et cetera. So he's a walking encyclopedia of the game, And he is going to be a Hall of Famer without question. That's why when we were asked to make our picks, who do you like in the World Series? There are clearly, to me, three teams in the American League that could be there. And I ended up just settling on the Astros because I really want that story. I want Dusty Baker to win a World Series.
Yeah, that would be really cool if that happened. I always tell people, you know, I don't root for teams, but I root for good stuff to happen to good people. And good stories, and that would check both of those boxes. Give me a key for the Brewers and Braves series. My key is I'm curious, and I picked the Brewers to win the series, but I am curious about where the offense is going to come from Milwaukee. You know, a team that only has only two players who reach 75 RBI. You know, they only have three players who scored 70 or more runs.
It's an interesting series in that it's the series that's being overshadowed by every other series. Dodgers and Giants is like an eclipse of baseball. It doesn't matter who else is playing. But here you have one team, Atlanta, that's pitching seemingly is now where it's at its best. And I think, again, given the five-game series, you've got a Cy Young guy on the mound in Corbin Burnes against Charlie Morton, who's got all the experience in the world and has had success, who's pitching as well as he has all year, followed by Max Fried, who's pitching as well as he has maybe in his career. So I think this is a really interesting set. Milwaukee, I agree with you on the offense. Atlanta's been peaking since the All-Star game and certainly the last couple of months. They've been great. The outfielders that they acquired were really good, and they can hit. Now, you're facing a strikeout staff, and they're a home run strikeout offense. And that's going to be a challenge. So I guess I'd counter with the Atlanta offense. Postseason home run hitting teams don't tend to do really well. The Braves depend a lot on the home run. And now you're facing a guy that doesn't give up a lot in Burnes. I don't know if this is overstating the obvious, but to me, the Brewers have to win game one. Because I do think with Max Fried on the mound, if you lose game one and that guy's pitching, I know going into it, you feel like, wow, the Brewers are really in trouble here because Fried's really good. And then we're going back to Atlanta and Ian Anderson's been a lot better. So I think it's going to be the ability of the Brewers to strike the Braves out. And if Burnes is good and they can get it to Hader, game over for the Brewers. But man, if Atlanta can get some hits here and get an early lead and Morton is good, we've seen this Braves middle bullpen be really good at times. That's a challenge. So I'll go with Atlanta's offense, their ability to hit Burnes and score runs and hit the ball over the wall as the key in game one.
Giants and Dodgers, you mentioned it's a series everyone's going to be paying attention to. For me, the key I'm looking for is how their starting pitchers respond to these moments on the big stage. Kevin Gausman has had a lot of years in the big leagues. He hasn't had a lot of big moments, though, in the postseason. Logan Webb has obviously been terrific, but this is, new for him. And on the other hand, I really feel like that the Dodgers have the sort of experience now in the postseason that becomes a weapon for them. What do you think is the key?
Yeah, the key to me is this concept of we still go in, or so many still go in. I've given up on questioning the Giants' validity. I'm there. I have the Giants and the Rays in the World Series. I think the ability of the Giants to do what they've done all year. So it's not really something new, but their ability to slow down the game. You know, when the Dodgers play baseball, to me, it always appears as if the game is moving at the pace they want it to. There's very right. little about a Dodger game that makes you think it's hectic, it's rushed, it's chaotic. It's always very calm. Mookie Betts is calm. You know, when he plays, Corey Seager is just calm. There's nothing about the pitchers, with the very small exception on a bad Kenley Jansen game where you're like, this isn't going. They're not in rhythm here. And everything about the Dodgers is rhythmic to me. They're not going to be somebody stealing home. I know Mookie Betts' speed helped win the 2020 World Series, but they're not doing those things. And I'm not saying that they're not smart enough or good enough to do them. They don't do those things. They hit two singles and then they get a wall ball double and there you go. It's two zip. And then their pitchers pitch and it ends. The Giants' ability to just kind of show that they can just keep their heartbeat where it's been all year, do what they've done all year, get guys on, hit home runs, make the plays defensively, and beat the team that you did beat in the division. That's going to be the key. If you start to see some of those indicators that this is a little bit bigger because it's the postseason, then you're in trouble. But there's zero reason to think that that's going to happen. They are a great team this year. They play their game. They can absolutely and should beat the Dodgers. But boy, LA just makes you feel like they are thoroughly in control of every moment in a game. And the Giants kind of have to prove the same thing. You know, we're going to mirror you. We're not going to get overly anxious. We're going to play the same way you do. But boy, there's a pace to the game the Dodgers seem to play with, especially in the postseason. And that experience is going to challenge the Giants.
Yeah, 100%. And that'll be that'll be a series that everyone's because of the history of the two teams, just like with the Red Sox and the Yankees the other night, baseball industry will be locked into it. All right, Ravi, watch out for the ghost and, yep. You know, help your friend Tim Kirchin along.
All right, Buster. Take care, buddy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how are you doing this week?
Doing great, Buster. How are you?
Yeah. You, of course, are well established in this podcast as a Red Sox fan. So Tuesday night must have been a lot of fun for you. And then last night, on the other hand, a little scary watching the Rays team.
Yeah, absolutely. Rays are a scary team. We knew that going in, defending American League champions. But you and I both know the meaning of the Yankees-Red Sox rivalry, whatever it is, came back a little bit Tuesday night. And all the memories flooded back to 1978, to 2003, to 2004. It was a very joyous occasion. And I enjoyed watching you. I was on the road. And anyway, we will... One thing at a time over here. Tough series with the Rays, and catwalks don't help matters.
Yeah. Stupid catwalks. That's the reason why. watching the starting pitcher last night go in and roll out 100 mile an hour sinkers. That was impressive. All right. Before we get to this week's Forgotten Franchise, I wanted to run this past you and get some thoughts from you on this. a 1911 Shoeless Joe Jackson autographed photograph by Frank W. Smith sold for $1.47 million, the most ever paid for a signed sports photograph. The photo was offered by Christie's and Hunt Auctions in New York, and the auction Extra Innings, a private collection of important baseball memorabilia. Other items sold was a Babe Ruth bat for $1.05 million, a 1925 Lou Gehrig autographed rookie exhibit postcard that went for $687,500, and a 1952 Joe DiMaggio autographed handwritten letter to Marilyn Monroe that fetched $525,000. Somebody was making some money yesterday, Todd.
Buster, I thought this was all about NFTs. I thought we're looking at non-fungible things. But yeah, amazing stuff. The history of our great national pastime continues to resonate. Are you a collector? You're not a collector of things, right?
No.
No.
No, I've got a few things, you know, nice things, but they're specific to me, and there's not, I'd never had interest in that. The idea of paying $1.5 million for a photograph, no.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you. And I'm sitting here in my office and I'm looking around, and to your point, I've got some things that are, again, you know, mean something to me. I got a couple of cool things signed. I'm not a big autograph guy. I'm a memories guy. And I certainly wouldn't be buying a photograph for $1.5 million. If I had $1.5 million to throw around, I don't know, maybe, you know, I'd buy a piece of a team or so. I, you know, wouldn't get me far. But yeah, that's something.
All right. Our friend Amy Chapman sent in a tweet that her favorite part of the podcast this year has been Todd Radom and the forgotten franchises. Maybe make them into a book with pictures, including what the sites look like then and now. And if you need an assistant, let me know. Just kidding. Not kidding. What say you?
Love it. Love it. This has been such a, you know, such an interesting thing to roll out all season long, Buster. And of course, over the last year, the last few years, and of course, I have a long-term contract with ESPN based upon our pizza exchange in Denver. We have done things like baseball caps and stadiums, but this one seems to be resonating with people in a little bit of a different way. So you never know. You never know. If it was a book, it wouldn't cost $1.5 million, whatever the case. But thank you, Amy. Those are very kind words.
Yeah, you certainly have a lot of material for a book proposal if you ever wanted to put that together, given all the work you've done on it this year. This week's entry from a team up in Boston.
That's right, Buster. This week, we are going to be taking a look at the very first home for the oldest continuous professional baseball franchise, the Atlanta Braves. This week's forgotten franchise is the Boston Braves, variously known as the Boston Red Stockings, Bees, Red Caps, Bean Eaters, Doves, and Rustlers. This franchise began play in 1871, playing in the National Association, where they won four of that league's five championships. The club shifted over to the National League for that circuit's first season, and they've been there ever since. The Boston Braves, who gained their current nickname in 1912, played in only two World Series, 1914 and 1948. The 1914 club is remembered for overcoming a huge deficit. At midseason, they were buried in last place, 15 games behind the league-leading Giants, but they went on an epic tear during the second half and swept the heavily favored Philadelphia Athletics in the Fall Classic, thus earning their eternal reputation as the, quote, Miracle Braves. The 1948 club drew nearly 1.5 million fans to Braves Field.
Jeez.
Led by starting pitchers Warren Spahn and Johnny Sain, they fell to Cleveland in a six-game World Series. This would prove to be the last great moment for the Braves in Boston, as well as the most recent World Series title for Cleveland. Faced with a resurgent Red Sox franchise located only 1 mile to the east, the Braves languished. The team was mediocre at best, attendance dwindled, and financial losses began to stack up. By 1952, the writing was on the wall. Home attendance for the entire 1952 season, Buster, was under 282,000 people, an average of 3,600 fans per game. The club was reborn in Milwaukee in 1953. This was the first MLB franchise shifted since 1902. That city embraced its new club and saw it win the 1957 World Series, But their fortunes again eventually shifted, and the Braves settled in Atlanta in 1966, and this is where they are today, appropriate for this NL Division Series. As for Braves Field, Boston University purchased the ballpark after the club left town and converted it into what's now called Nickerson Field. The old ticket office still stands. It's now the home to BU's police station, and the right field pavilion, as well as part of the exterior right field wall, are still intact. Buster, someday you and I are going to go visit. We will contemplate the Braves' 82 seasons in Boston, but for now, the Boston Braves are this week's forgotten franchise.
82 seasons. When I saw that number, I was like, wow, that's right. And of course, they were the last team, as you well know, of Babe Ruth.
Yes.
I think that that's the team everybody forgets when they think about Babe Ruth's career. And he hit career homers number 712, 713, and 714 all in the last game for the Boston Braves before, and that was against the Pittsburgh Pirates before he retired. And about that 1914 team, you know, it was always one of my favorite teams in history because the deficit that it overcame, and you and I were about the same age when the Red Sox in 1978 let a big lead slip away to the Yankees. And that was the team that they were always compared to. The Yankees were, as they came back, were the 1914 Boston Braves. And I remember when I was a kid reading a write-up of the Philadelphia Athletics and how daunting they were against the Braves in the World Series because they had the $100,000 infield. Right?
Which included very quaint numbers.
Eddie Collins and Home Run Baker.
Yeah. And here you go, Buster. This is one of the reasons why October is so special. We get new storylines. We get new heroes freshly minted every year. But we do get these storylines that extend way back into the history of the game, including the 1914 Braves and the 1948 Braves. Every year, you know, you'll see these citations of these classic old teams from way back. But I've been to Braves Field, to the little pieces over there. It's not far from Fenway. You could take a walk. History is all around us. And one last thing, the Braves, 3 World Series championships in 3 different cities, Boston, Milwaukee, and of course, Atlanta, 1995. So curious piece of trivia right there.
That's pretty cool. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, speaking of trivia, here we go, guys. Which of these events occurred most recently? A, Jose Altuve was born. B, the Oakland A's played in a World Series game. C, lights were installed at Wrigley Field. Or D, Nolan Ryan pitched his 7th and final no-hitter. Which occurred most recently? The birth of Jose Altuve, the A's playing in a World Series, lights at Wrigley, or Nolan Ryan pitching his 7th no-hitter.
Taylor, what do you got?
Lights at Wrigley is my answer.
I'm going to go Nolan Ryan pitching his 7th no-hitter.
Buster, you are on a roll. It was Nolan Ryan pitching his 7th final hit. May 1, 1991. Taylor remembers it. Well, lights were installed at Wrigley in 1988. The A's played in a World Series game October 20th, 1990 against the Cincinnati Reds. And Jose Altuve, little baby Jose Altuve, May 6th, 1990. Who knows who he was rooting for in that World Series. But Buster, now with a commanding, unbeatable, statistically impossible to defeat, 10 wins against 5 for Taylor and an epic 15 ties here.
Woohoo! That yes, better than I slam thought. Dunk. Taylor?
Champagne flying, trophies being handed out.
Don't exactly. Let it get in your eyes.
We're spraying champagne all over the place. We're going nuts, but Taylor's going to console himself with the fact that by the end of the weekend, we have to refer to him as Reverend.
Mm-hmm. This is true. So, Buster, I think that counts more in life generally than a silly baseball trivia contest on a meaningless podcast.
Yeah, that's what my older sister always used to do. Well, sports isn't important anyway, or, you know, the board game that you just beat me in, that's not important anyway. Yeah, sure. Now I get it.
Yeah, tell that to all of those heartbroken Boston Braves fans who had to deal with their team having moved in 1952. Come on now.
Exactly. All right, Todd. Thank you, Taylor.
All right.
Sorry.
Thanks, guys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher tweets for a glorious Friday. We've got our friend Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit up first. Mitchell writes in, after that NL wildcard game, I am just dreaming of another winner-take-all game. Which series in the divisional round is most likely to give us a game five?
This feels like low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to say Giants and Dodgers. Doesn't it feel like that they need to play a five-game series after the regular season and came down the last day and one team wins 107 and the other teams win 106? Doesn't it have to be the Giants and Dodgers, Mitchell?
Has to be. It's the only way this can end for them. David Skaggs at David Skaggs 37 writes in, hey, Buster, am I wrong for thinking that the Braves should beat the Brewers? I know the Brewers' rotation is daunting, but Morton Fried, best MLB ERA of 1.74 since the All-Star break, are dealing, and the Braves' offense is clearly better.
I don't know about the word should. I think they absolutely could. I've talked about how my son is a Braves fan, and he and I were texting today, and I think he's feeling a lot of confidence. I mentioned, I mean, think about that. The guy that led the Brewers in RBI had 86 for the year. I think the next closest guy is like 68. Like, that is not a juggernaut, and they could easily get shut down. I agree with Carl. I think game one's huge for the Brewers.
That is some grim offensive production. Last one for today, Mike Mosk at the Mosk 3 writes in, from all-star to mop-up duty to not being on the Sox ALDS roster, how the mighty have fallen. What happened to Matt Barnes? Is he fixable?
I think he got tired. And you do wonder, too, with a lot of pitchers, I want to make sure that I make this clear. This is not specific to Matt Barnes. A lot of pitchers, you know, Garrett Cole, Garrett Richards, I think Aroldis Chapman, these guys were affected by the crackdown on sticky stuff. I think it just changed the whole game for them. And so Matt Barnes, I haven't gone and done it before and after, but he was so great early in the year, and then second half he really struggled. But yes, he is fixable, no doubt about it.
Glad to hear he's not a lost cause. Keep writing in over the weekend. Again, we got that smorgasbord of games. Listen on ESPN Radio, hashtag Bleacher Tweets as you're watching and listening. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you tweet in, only refer to me by Reverend Schwenk. That's the only name I'll respond to from now on, Buster.
That's it for today. My thanks to Reverend Schwenk, to Carl, to Todd. Have a great day, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.